As we begin, I remind you that we are looking at some of the transition material between the time of the Old Testament and the New Testament, trying to understand what changed between the time of Nehemiah and the time of the parents of John the Immerser and Jesus the Christ. We are particularly focusing on the heroes of the Hasmonean family that threw off the attempts of eradicating the Jewish faith during the early 2nd century BC, and how their work eventually resulted in the establishment of the independent Hasmonean kingdom of the Jews. But then almost as soon as it got started in about 142 BC, it starts being focused on expanding and less focused upon righteousness. And as we go through the next generation and then move into the next generation after that, it really falls apart. And we're currently looking at the worst character of them up to this point, and that would be a man by the name of Alexander Janaeus. And he began controlling things in about 103 BC. And as he was functioning as the high priest at the altar in Jerusalem, the people disliked him. The religious people is what I think we're talking about here. The religious people among the Jews disliked him so much that they started pelting him with these little hard citrus fruits that were carried during the celebration of the Feast of Tabernacles. And he became very angry at this and retaliated. And then in the future, he made sure there was a wooden barricade between himself and the people whenever he was functioning as the high priest to make sure that this never happened again. Now, in the years that followed, because he reigns a good long time, there is about a six-year civil war that takes place, people resisting him. And he ends up killing no fewer than 50,000 of his fellow Jews. Then, after things are kind of coming to a conclusion in that civil war, apparently he wants to know from the remainder of the people what would cause them to desist from their ill will toward him. And they start yelling back, "If you'd kill yourself." And of course, you know, that does not go over well because this man has turned into a tyrant. Now, on a much later occasion, apparently, he punished some of the rebellious people of one particular Jewish city by bringing the survivors, and here I'm going to quote to you from Josephus' writings in Antiquities, book 13, quote, "to Jerusalem, and did one of the most barbarous actions of the world to them. For as he was feasting with his concubines in the sight of all the city, he ordered about 800 of them to be crucified. And while they were living, he ordered the throats of their children and wives to be cut before their eyes." End quote. So that's how evil a man he was, that he brought some of his Jewish detractors into Jerusalem. And while he's feasting away in the sight of everybody, he has them crucified and then has their family members killed in front of them on their crosses. Very bad man. And he finally comes to his end in 76 BC. Now, by that time, he had expanded by his militaristic practices the Hasmonean kingdom to its farthest extent. This is important because an awful large chunk of this will remain under the control of future Jewish leaders, including King Herod the Great. And so I just want you to understand that King Herod's kingdom and the largeness of it is due in a very large way to this Jewish tyrant from earlier, right around, this guy will die right around the time that Herod is born. All right, so according to Josephus, Alexander Junius spent the last 3 years of his life fighting this persistent and intermittent fever, and that his heavy drinking was taking an obvious toll on his health. And so he still insisted, though, that he needed to be at the front of his military campaigns. And so he ends up coming to his deathbed at the age of 49, far away from Jerusalem. And his soon-to-be widow, his wife of many years, Alexandra, comes to his bedside weeping, and she's worried about their family's future because he has alienated so many of the Jewish people. And so she figures there are reprisals coming. And this is the quote from Josephus: "To whom do you leave me and my children, who are destitute of all other supports? And this when you know how much ill will your nation bears you," end quote. So why are you leaving us in this horrible situation by dying and letting us have to deal with the repercussions? So his final advice to her, because he knows he's dying, was that she should conceal his death from the public until she had met with the Pharisees in Jerusalem. The Pharisees at this time had their power base at Jerusalem, while the Sadducees had kind of disseminated their power base around the country. Now, later, that's going to reverse itself, but that's the way it is right now. So he wants her to go to the Pharisees secretly and offer a power-sharing arrangement with them. Now, here's the quote from Josephus, Antiquities, chapter 13. Book 13, chapter 15. "Do you, therefore," he said, "when you come to Jerusalem, send for the leading men among them. Show them my body, and with great appearance of sincerity, give them permission to use it as they themselves please, whether they will dishonor the dead body by refusing a burial, as having severely suffered by my means, or whether in their anger they will offer any other injury to that body. Promise them also that they will do nothing without them in the affairs of the kingdom. If you will but say this to them, I shall have the honor of a more glorious funeral from them than you could have made for me. And when it is in their power to abuse my dead body, they will do it no injury at all, and you will rule in safety." And so apparently his political instincts were correct, because that's exactly what she does. Their influence upon the kingdom from that point eclipses that of the Sadducees. Because by supporting the widow Alexandra as the next queen, but being kind of the power behind the throne, the Pharisees really became a power to be reckoned with in about the first third going into the second third of the first century BC. Now, at this point, we start talking about two individuals that set the stage for the end of the Hasmonean kingdom and the coming into the Jewish kingdom of Roman leadership to be very much prominent in the Jewish lands. And so I'm going to read to you about these two men from Antiquities, Book 13, Chapter 16. This is after the funeral has all taken place and Alexandra is now functioning as the queen. Alexander left behind him two sons, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. Now, to distinguish them from previous relatives, this is Hyrcanus II and Aristobulus II. Continuing, he committed the kingdom to Alexandra. Now, as to these two sons, Hyrcanus was indeed unable to manage public affairs and delighted rather in a quiet life. So the older brother really wasn't interested in political matters, in kingdom affairs. He just wanted to kind of live a quiet life as high priest, presumably. But the younger Aristobulus was an active and bold man. And for this woman herself, Alexandra, she was loved by the multitude because she seemed displeased at the offenses her husband had been guilty of. So the younger brother, he really wants to rule. But mom is the ruler for right now. She is the queen of the Jews. And she appears to be a very affable woman and does great things for the Jewish people during her time on the throne, which is from 76 to 67 BC. So she made Hyrcanus high priest because he was the elder, but much more because he cared not to meddle with politics and permitted the Pharisees to do everything. So in our modern day mindset, the best way to kind of explain this is that she becomes like the Queen of England is today. She's the figurehead. But the Pharisees, particularly the Pharisees in control of the Sanhedrin, they're functioning like the parliament does. They're the real power players in the kingdom. All right, back to Josephus. So she permitted the Pharisees to do everything, to whom also she ordered the multitude to be obedient. She also restored again those practices which the Pharisees had introduced according to the traditions of their forefathers, which her father-in-law Hyrcanus had abrogated. So she had indeed the name of regent, but the Pharisees had the authority. For it was they who restored such as had been banished and set such as were prisoners at liberty, and to say all at once, they differed in nothing from lords. Now later we will read about the aristocracy of the Jews. And that is kind of a reference here to the idea of the Sanhedrin. Even though the Sanhedrin was kind of locked up by the Pharisees at this time, the Sanhedrin through time is going to be run by powerful family heads among the Jewish people. And they will be the aristocrats of the Jewish nation. And there will be times at which the people will want to go back to the Sanhedrin running things. All right, so in 76 BC, Salome Alexandra becomes the widow. She's the widow of the king and high priest, so she becomes the new queen, and her son, Hyrcanus II, begins functioning as the high priest. in 67, she dies. And almost immediately, the supporters of the two brothers start fighting for control of the kingdom. They meet in pitched battle at Jericho. Many of Hyrcanus' troops desert to Aristobulus. And the reason seems to be because Aristobulus is the much more politically active and astute brother. And so he starts attracting people that are interested in the power base for the kingdom. So Hyrcanus retreats back to Jerusalem, and he barricades himself in the citadel, which is the fortress north and slightly west of the temple shrine building. There he has his sister-in-law and her children, that is, the children of his brother, being held. And eventually, because of this situation, the two brothers come to a power-sharing arrangement. And it sounds pretty much like an arrangement already kind of brokered by mom when she was alive. And that is that the younger brother, Aristobulus II, will rule as the king of the Jews, while Hyrcanus, the elder brother, will function as the high priest of the people of the Jews. And that arrangement might have worked if it weren't for the intervention of a man named Antipater the Idumean. This is the father of Herod the Great, who, by the way, is just a little kid at this time. Antipater was the son of Antipater. Antipater was the son of Antipas, who was King Alexander's governor of Idumea. Now, you might remember, underneath John Hyrcanus, Idumea was absorbed into the Judean kingdom, and all Idumeans were expected to convert to the Jewish faith and culture. And so this Antipas, or his dad, perhaps, at the time, converted to the Jewish faith, to the Jewish community. And so when Antipas becomes old enough to be involved in government affairs, he is tapped by King Alexander to be the ruler over all the Idumean peoples in southern Judea. Well, now his son is a close friend of Hyrcanus. And Antipater keeps telling his friend Hyrcanus, "You're the oldest son. You ought to be the king. You have the right as the firstborn to be the king. You shouldn't let your little brother push you around. You shouldn't let him assert control. It's your birthright." And so eventually, Hyrcanus, even though he really doesn't want the job, feels that he really should stand up for himself and assert his right to the throne. And so because Antipater has developed a relationship with the king of Arabia, a man by the name of Aretas III, he introduces his friend Hyrcanus to this Arabian king, and the three of them together make a pact that they will go into Judea together and make Hyrcanus the rightful king of the Jews. And so that happens in the early spring, possibly the late winter, but the early spring of 64, that they invade Judea. They defeat the army of King Aristobulus, and this early defeat inspires a lot of the men to defect to Hyrcanus as the legitimate king. So you can see, you know, the winds of change are blowing. When Passover comes in mid-April of 64, Aristobulus has barricaded himself in the temple with what few supporters he has left after this successful invasion by Hyrcanus and Tipater and Aretas. And this is what is reported in Antiquities, Book 14, Chapter Number 2 by Josephus. Quote, "When the priests and Aristobulus were besieged, it happened that the feast called the Passover was come, at which it is our custom to offer a great number of sacrifices to God. But those that were with Aristobulus wanted sacrifices and desired that their countrymen without, that is, outside the temple, would furnish them with such sacrifices and assured them that they should have as much money as for them as they would desire." So basically, the people barricaded in the temple now want animal sacrifices to offer during Passover, but they don't have any. So they basically offer to buy them from the besiegers outside at whatever price they fix for it. Now listen to this. "When they required them to pay 1,000 drachma for each head of cattle." Now, each drachma is a day's wage. So we're talking about 1,000 days' wages. This is an exorbitant amount of money for a single cow. "So when that happens, Aristobulus and the priests willingly undertook to pay for them accordingly, and those within let down the money over the walls and gave it to them. But when the when the others had received it, they did not deliver the sacrifices, but arrived at the height of wickedness as to break the assurances they'd given, and to be guilty of impiety toward God by not furnishing those that wanted them with sacrifices." So I break in again into this story to help you appreciate what we're talking about here. The Jewish religion is not being taken seriously by an awful lot of the characters in these stories. They're going through the motions, but they're not really feeling it in their hearts. And so Josephus, who takes all this stuff very seriously, he feels that this is horrendous activity. This is very disrespectful, disrespectful to God himself. Now, let's finish up what he said. Quote, "And when the priests found that they'd been cheated and that the agreements that they had made were violated, they prayed to God that he would avenge them on their countrymen. Nor did he delay that their punishment, but sent a strong and vehement storm of wind that destroyed the fruits of the whole country till a modius of wheat was then bought for 11 drachmae." So a modius is, it's about a quarter of a bushel. So that means about a quarter of a bushel was then costing about 7 days' wages, because this windstorm sweeps across the entire country and ruins the barley crop that was about to be harvested. And so you can see that things are not going well in Judea at this time. Meanwhile, let's set the stage here. Meanwhile, the Romans are represented in the area of the eastern Middle East by Pompey the Great, who was married to the daughter of Julius Caesar. Both these guys are very active in Roman politics at this time. And Pompey was involved in a war in the north toward the to the north of the Hasmonean kingdom against, well, he's against the Greeks, he's against the different groups of Mesopotamia. And so his son-in-law, Scaurus, had responsibility for the region of Damascus and south. And so this Scaurus guy, a Roman, he comes down to Jerusalem to arbitrate the dispute of succession between these two brothers. Now, the reason he does it goes back to something we've been talking about repeatedly. The Romans and the Jews have been in a mutual assistance pact for decades. And the agreement is this: anyone that attacks the Roman ally of the Jews will be attacked by the Romans. Well, what happens when you've got two Jews attacking each other? The Romans have to sort out which one is our legitimate ally, because that's the one we'll support, and the other one will be the Roman enemy. So that's the thing that's been triggered now by the mutual assistance treaty between the Romans and the Jews since the time of Judas Maccabee. All right, so Scaurus comes down to Jerusalem to arbitrate this dispute. Both sides start trying to bribe their way to a successful arbitration. Each of them promises to pay 400 talents of silver into the Roman treasury if he'll just decide in their favor. Now that's 400 times 6,000 days' wages. That's millions of dollars of buying power that we're talking about here. Now, Scaurus initially decides in favor of Aristobulus, which Josephus says was mostly because he was already barricaded inside the capital city of Jerusalem. And so Scaurus orders the withdrawal of the other forces from the region. Come back tomorrow, and we'll finish more of this story.